Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 330 for comics originally released on December 4th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Swamp Thing number 26. I've been reading Swamp Thing since Crisis on Infinite Earths, actually a bit before that. I may have skipped the series where Tefe was the Swamp Thing. How much of Swamp Thing have you read, Drew?
I read Alan Moore writing Swamp Thing, and that's it.
Okay, so it's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah.
So none of the new 52 stuff leading up to this?
Nope.
So you sat out that entire Rot World story for the year and a half it went on.
I think that was the right move.
I think so too. It was too long. It was way too long. I'll admit, Swamp Thing is one of the few Vertigo books I've gotten over the years, and when they folded the Vertigo universe back into the new 52, it was one of those areas. It's like, well, do I want to get that or not? DCBS did all those bundles for the first couple of months, at which point it's like, okay, I'm kind of, you know, in deep now. I may as well stay there. And it was enjoyable if somewhat drawn out. But really, since the Rot World stuff has wrapped up and the Cedar storyline has started up and whatnot, this book is really picking up for me. I'm sure you noticed the writer, Charles Soule, who we've been saying great things about lately. I don't know if he is just new to writing or gotten much better lately, or it just has been woefully ignored for far too long. Because I'm really enjoying a lot of the stuff he's doing these days. He's doing great work here.
Yeah. Most of the stuff that I've read with his name on it has been good to great, and I enjoy this as well. The art is by Jesus Says, if that's really his name. I don't know. That seems pretty convenient, but maybe I'm mispronouncing it. Maybe it's Jesus Saez.
I don't know, but they're doing a lot of using a lot of artists and stuff from around the world, so I don't think that's, you know, a fake name or anything. Jeez. But, you know, who knows? One of the things I did like about this issue was they did a really good job of having Alec Holland, Swamp Thing, kind of narrating aspects or most of the story, giving us a lot of really good background on the Cedar and, you know, his status quo and stuff, pulling in Animal Man and moving the whole story forward quite a bit. So to me, the story was working on a couple of different levels and moving a couple of different things forward without, like, jumping between them. It did it all kind of at once, which was pretty impressive, I thought.
Yeah, it worked well as exposition. I liked it helped a lot, and I enjoyed the origin story, the Cedar origin story. I thought that was really great. And then, you know, we get the good battle scenes, good conflict. We've got, you know, nice art, well written, everything you want in a comic book. I mean, this was really, really great.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to be reading Swamp Thing. And it's interesting that they had to kind of place this story within a few issues, a few months back. I think it was between 19 and 22 or something of Animal Man. And I'm not sure where all of this is fitting into what's going on elsewhere with Swamp Thing right now, because he's showing up over in Constantine and the whole Forever Evil Blight stuff. But, you know, regardless of where it fits into that bigger picture and stuff, this is just doing some really good things. I am kind of expecting at the end of this storyline arc, whatever, that the Cedar stuff is going to kind of wrap up and the Swamp Thing status quo is going to kind of revert to how it was, not how it is within this issue. But I could be wrong on that. I that's just what I'm expecting. Do you have any thoughts along those lines, or how long?
You know, I really don't know what to expect. Not having read it. I'm along for the ride, and Yeah, I hope we get a little bit more of the Cedar. He seems like a pretty tough dude. But I'm hoping that our narrator comes back into the picture at some point.
Are you the least bit familiar with with the character of Jason Woodrow, the Cedar.
No, this was my first introduction to him.
Okay. He is a longtime character in the DC Universe. He used to go under the name the Fluronic Man, and he was one of the New Guardians after Millennium. But he's also a character that's not such a high-profile one that I'm surprised, you know, you haven't heard of or something.
Hmm.
There have been times he's definitely flown kind of under the radar. But this is a great take on the character and a really good use of him. So for me, I mean, this was a solid 4 out of 5. It's really good stuff. I think it's really, for me, kind of picked the book up, and I'm looking forward to see where they go.
Yep, and a solid 4 out of 5 for me. And I think that's the one thing DC has over everybody else. I mean, I love Image books, and I love my small press stuff and my indie sensibilities and things like that. But DC has such a vast, you know, library of characters, and like you just tell me this, you know, this guy's been around for, you know, they can just pluck these people up and reinvigorate their origin stories and reintroduce them to a new 52 audience like myself and make them fresh and new. And they've just got, there's more where that guy came from, you know?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, speaking along those lines, with this particular issue, not only are they doing a great job kind of reinventing and retooling the Fluronic Man as the Cedar here, but prior to that, Animal Man at one point was just a joke, literally one of the forgotten heroes, a member of that team, yet he had been reinvented in his series back in Vertigo and such to be a very interesting, viable character. And, you know, at one point, Swamp Thing was kind of there off on the side before he became a big deal. DC has a definite track record of being able to take characters of varying levels and retool them, reinvigorate them, and re-energize them in some very fun ways, while still staying, in many cases, very true to the original material, in some cases, radically different. And that's I think, a big strength of their library. And, I mean, your comments about just how vast it is, it's interesting how, you know, we're over 2 years into the new 52. There's still a ton of properties and characters they could pull out, dust off, you know, and reimagine into the new 52. And they could be doing that for a couple of years with a new title a month if they needed to. Hopefully they won't, but you know what I mean? Just with how big their library is.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and I expect them to continue to do that. And you know, if they can find teen trillionaires from way back in one issue from their library, I mean, I expect there's way more stuff to expect after that. So I mean that character's great. I didn't realize he was so prevalent already. But I really, this was good. This was really a good issue, and I'm gonna keep reading.
Cool. Good to hear.
So there's another one you got me on.
I have not been keeping track of who's gotten who on more titles, but
you're up.
You've gotten me on a couple, and I appreciate that. It's always fun to find new things to read. But I've also got a fairly full pull list at the moment, so I'm okay that I'm getting you on more things than you're getting me on. Shall we move on to our Marvel book of the week?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Avengers Annual number 1. This is a Christmas-themed issue. And what I really enjoyed about this is it was kind of an offbeat Christmas story in some respects. I mean, it was clearly set at Christmas, clearly had the holiday theme aspect to it, but it wasn't kind of that standard story, you know, that kind of sappy Christmassy, oh, isn't the holiday wonderful, you know, kind of moral of the story. You know what I mean? There have been a lot of Christmassy stories trotted out over the years and the decades and such. A lot of them have been a lot of fun, but a number of them fall into certain story patterns or whatever. This really didn't. This was just a really fun adventure set, you know, on Christmas Eve in the Avenger Tower, in and around. And it could have just as easily been any other holiday weekend or whatever, yet still harkened just enough back to the Christmassy aspect that it worked well. I really enjoyed the story here. The art was a little, I don't say looser or more cartoony than I tend to favor, but it worked perfectly well in this issue and fit the story pretty well. What were your thoughts on this one?
In general, I really like Christmas issues. They feel very comfortable, especially, you know, if they're done in one nature almost always, and very usually always end well. Very good beginning and middle and end, and this one worked for me as well. I had a lot of fun with it. Catherine Immonen, I know her from somewhere, but I can't place it exactly. The art by David LaFuente, I agree, it's not my style, but it didn't hurt the story.
No, not at all.
I liked Catherine Immonen's story. I thought it was really, really solid and a lot of fun and just a really nice Christmas issue, you know. And that's I like these every once in a while. They're nice.
I enjoyed it. I thought the character we got introduced to here, I'm curious if we're going to see her again.
I
hope so too. I think she'd make for a fascinating Avenger. I don't know quite how well she would fit into that kind of a team structure or whatever, but it certainly would be fun to see them try. The one thing that there were two things that I was reading this kind of stuck out at me. One was the opening kind of splash page where we're getting a little narration and stuff like that. There, where the captions were, where some of the inset panels were, was a little out of sync for me because I'm reading that second caption talking about the dog, and I'm like, there's no dog in this area. And further down, oh, there's the dog.
Yeah, that one was – I had to – every time I'd read a box, I'd go look and search out which bubble it was in. And you know, some of it was tough to find.
That was something that I don't think the writer and the artist were literally on the same page. That was not, and it was just a one-off thing. It doesn't really impact the enjoyment of the story at all or whatever, but it was something that makes me think they either could have been more coordinated or the editor could have helped out a little there.
Or it's upside down.
Or it's upside down. That well, you know.
I was trying to see if maybe if you could look at it the other way, it would work a little better, but I still think they're out of sequence, no matter which way you look at it.
If you rotate the art and leave the lettering, then the dog's upside down. That'd be bad.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think you might be onto something. It may have been intended to go in a different direction. Huh. At least the background image. Anyways, the other thing that stood out to me and wasn't a problem, but had me kind of scratching my head a little, the guy that Cap sits down with. I don't know if we're supposed to know who that is. I don't think it necessarily matters, but I felt like I was missing something there.
Okay.
The
Shang-Chi character?
No, the guy in the jacket, yellow jacket at the soup kitchen.
Oh, yeah, okay. Him. Yeah, it was like he was introduced to him there, but they seemed so familiar and at ease with each other. It was like they had an entire history together. But yet it seemed like the soup kitchen people were introducing them almost or putting them together. Yeah. Well, that was strange.
And then we get the a page or so later, Cap looking at the photo from World War II, and there's a guy in there that looks kind of like him.
Yeah.
It's like that, his grandson, what's going on there? There was something.
Yeah.
That I felt like I missed. Not a big deal, didn't impact my enjoyment of the story, but kept it from kind of firing on all.
And where would you have received that information? I mean, what Avengers book would that have been in?
I think the expectation was the photo there was supposed to explain it.
Yeah, okay. But the coffee steam kind of covered up all the content, didn't it?
Yeah, again, minor misfire, not critical to the story, but there are a few areas in this where I felt it could have been a little stronger, a little bit better. Mm-hmm. As it was, I still really enjoyed it. I thought the character they introduced was a fun, different kind of a character that this kind of kicked above average for me. But, you know, for me, it was a low four. It was solid. It was good. I enjoyed it. I liked that they didn't go down the familiar and all too often used Christmas tropes and stuff.
Yeah.
And told a different story.
I kept it as a three, but a solid three that is, you know, it's fun. It's worth reading, you know. But I wouldn't say it was good to great. It was a lot of fun to read, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a little above that. Mm-hmm. But again, I think more of that was telling a different kind of a Christmas story and the character they introduced. But, I mean, I guess what I'm hearing from you is you felt this was more of just kind of an average comic and stuff, not...
Yeah, I mean, it was above average, but I don't think a four.
Okay, that's fair, that's fair. I can see where you're coming from on that. Like I said, to me, it was a low four. I think we're on different sides of that dividing line, but not that far off.
Not that far apart, I agree with you.
It was again, fun and a good Christmas-type issue without being overly Christmassy. Shall we move on to our independent book of the week?
Sure.
This is Velvet number 2 from Image Comics, specifically Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting, who are doing an amazing job on this title. This is some really fun spy action adventure stuff. And one of the things I really enjoyed about this issue is while the story is continuing from the first issue, this issue felt very accessible. And I think if you had somehow missed the first issue, you could still come in here. And if you're willing to kind of hit the ground running, go with it and kind of follow most of what's going on. Would you agree with that?
I felt it picked up right where we left off of the last issue, even though a month has passed between issues.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't miss a beat. And I was quickly ramped up and ready to continue that story. And I think, yeah, you probably could pick up on this. If this was your first intro into Velvet, you'd be able to figure it out. There's enough clues there and enough occasional exposition, not heavy-handed, just, you know, throughout the story that gives you what you need to know. And even more of Velvet than we got in issue one. And I like her even better now than I did after issue one, and I liked her a lot.
I think they did some fun stuff, both with her in action and with kind of the montage of who is she, what's her history or whatever. And we just get a couple of shots of one guy reading over the file with some photos in the background, or, you know, images overlaid, you know, flashback type stuff. And really, in the space of five panels, implies a lot of story, a lot of back history to the character, with literally no exposition, which I thought was very artfully done.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And yeah, the speaking of art, the art's great. She's a very cool looking character, and kind of a unique character to have a more of a middle-aged heroine as the anchor of your book. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of that. And it's really, really very effective. And I enjoyed it. It was right up there with the first issue for me, and, just a solid, enjoyable, fun read.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this is something that if somebody's into kind of that action adventure spy stuff, kind of the James Bond-ish sort of, you know, story, but want a female lead or whatever, or kind of like the Tomb Raider movies or, you know, something like that, this really fits that vibe. It's a very different character, but it's that kind of a story. And again, top-notch creators, beautiful art, great story. And I think the team is working very well together. There are times where the writer takes definitely, you know, just steps back and says, okay, you know, Steve, go do it with the art. And he knocks it out of the park. There were two things with the letters page that I found very interesting. The first was the way it started. After it's kind of a, hey, we've named the letters page, they've got like a paragraph long apology for this thing being 1 week late.
Yeah.
A week late to me is in the noise. You missed a deadline. You just didn't quite get it out. You missed the printing cutoff or whatever. Okay, it's now a week late. Fine. You know, do I like stuff on time? Yeah. But unless it's a weekly series, week late's not that big of a deal to me. But these guys, hey, we apologize. Here's what happened, you know, and so forth. To me, that's a sign of respect for the readers. I really appreciate that. They know that we're basically paying their bills by buying this stuff. And they want to be on time. They didn't, and they weren't, and they apologized. I respect that. The other thing, though, that kind of was in here, and I forget exactly where it was, they referred to this as a period piece. Top of the second column of the second page of the letter page. Wanted to make Velvet a period piece because of the use of the word secretary and some stuff like that. I wasn't really seeing anything in this issue that couldn't be modern day. So I'm not saying it's not a period piece, but it's not like one that's a blatant period piece, if you know what I mean.
No, this doesn't feel dated or rooted in any kind of decade to me at all. I did not pick up on that.
It's got kind of a timeless aspect to it. It's something, there may be a few things maybe in the first issue or in future issues of, okay, we won't see cell phones or we'll see a rotary dial phone or something like that. But it's not one of those where they're in a horse and buggy or Victorian England or, you know, something crazy like that.
Well, I guess, you know, when she was in her heyday and in her prime, it was early 50s to mid 50s. And if, let's say, she's in her 20s then and now she's in her 40s, you fast forward, or even 50s, you fast forward, then that would put this into the late 70s, early 80s, right?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Maybe late 70s.
It was those pages that had her previous adventures in the 50s that had me a little puzzled as to how old is she, what year is this? And then when they said it was a period piece, it's like, oh, okay, that makes a little sense, I guess. But it was something that I really hadn't been thinking about one way or the other throughout the story, just because the story was told in the now, even though there's 2 hours earlier, that kind of stuff. But anyways, it didn't feel dated or locked into a specific time frame or something like that. And again, part of it is just a really well-told story that could pretty much fit, you know, in almost any time era in, you know, modern day, if you will.
Yeah. Now, are you reading Fatale as well?
No, I'm not. Actually, am I?
It's the same guy, right?
Yeah, same guy. You know, it's sad that I'm reading enough stuff that I need to go look up if I'm reading that. I honestly don't remember off the top of my head if I'm reading it. When was the last issue of Fatale came out? Has it been recently? Because if so, I'm not.
Yeah, I think like one of the ads is for a Fatale ad. It's Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Not the same. It's not the same artist, but
yeah, no. I was thinking a different book entirely. I am not reading Fatale.
And it's but it's got it looks very noir-y. Mm-hmm. And because of this, I think I need to check this out. I really think I need to take a look at Fatale and give it a shot.
I would recommend it. I've heard good things about it. It was a little bit more into the noirish kind of look than I was really wanting at the time it started. The Fatale I read, by the way, was by Broadway Comics back in 1996. So I have read a Fatale series. But I have read some other stuff by these creators and stuff, certainly. Obviously, Epting and Brubaker and Sean Phillips, too.
But I mean, even though I didn't notice this was a period piece, it does feel very rooted in whatever tense it's in, and enjoyable. This issue in particular was action packed, and from just very on a lot of action pieces in this, and that was fun. So you know, couple all that together, and good writing and nice art, and it's a solid 4.
Yeah, it's where I came out with it too. It's not quite enough to be a 5 out of 5 for me, but it's certainly working in that direction. They did a great job. Very, very strong 4 out of 5. And it's interesting. It had a ton of action, yet never felt like it was careening out of control or anything or something. There's some books that are just so trying to wow you with the action that it's like it's out of control. But this one, I felt they know exactly where they're going, what they're doing, and are just telling a really fun story. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep reading for sure.
Yeah, same here. I'm on for a while. Image has been doing some good stuff these days that I'm really getting on board with. So speaking of other titles and whatnot, this was a decent sized week for me, and geez, it's hard to keep up normally. It's possible for me, but this was one that was a little more challenging than normal because we had the ice up in Dallas last weekend. So my books that normally would have come on Friday came on Monday. But I've gotten through, I believe, all of them except for like one digest-sized deal. Great stuff these days coming out. First issue of Inhumanity. Did you read that?
Nope.
You plan on, you're sitting that one out, aren't you?
I think so. Isn't it like coming out of Cataclysm and?
No, it's coming out of Infinity.
Right, which I also bailed on. So
yeah, this is the one where the Tarragon mists or whatever have essentially, you know, exploded into the atmosphere or some such and have triggered humans who thought they were regular humans, but are really latent inhumans to kind of mutate into their inhuman state. And this was the first issue kind of setting that up, explaining it a bit further. And I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. Hopefully I'll like that a bit more than Infinity. Infinity I enjoyed, but was not just wowed by. We'll see how this one does for me.
Yeah, it's good. I had a lot of fun with Earth 2. I read Earth 2 17 and 18, which were 18 was out this week, but I saved 17 to read again because it wasn't as wild the first time around. And I read it back to back with 18, and it's Tom Taylor from Injustice taking over, and I had a lot of fun with it. I really enjoyed it. It felt like Injustice almost. It felt like he had slipped a little of his sensibilities from Injustice into Earth 2, and taking some liberties and making some leaps with some of the things he's done, and it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think Tom Taylor, when he really gets the story going like he has in Injustice and is starting to do here, he pushes the envelope and takes characters further than they usually go, in a different direction than they usually go, but in a very smooth, believable manner. It's not like they wake up one day and they're suddenly different. That they're put through their paces and events reshape them into how they become. And I think a separate world of Earth 2 to play on is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this. I hope they bring in some other classic Earth 2 characters, beef up the number of characters in the story without it getting overwhelmed or hard to follow. If he can balance that, and he has beautifully over in Injustice, this is a title that I could definitely see picking up in sales and doing pretty well.
Yeah, totally agree with that. John Layman did another solid story over at in Detective Comics number 26. This was a Man-Bat story, and again, I enjoyed it. I'm gonna be sad to see him go, and I hope he lands somewhere in the Bat universe. I haven't heard anything yet, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been out there. But I really enjoyed his take on In Detective. It's been really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that issue. It was fun. I like how Man-Bat is kind of recurring in the Batman titles and books, yet not just all over the place, yet not getting ignored either. He's in a nice, comfortable usage pattern, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's not like Clayface, where we just can't seem to get rid of the guy.
Yeah. It works here. And mm-hmm. we have had a little bit of Man-Bat, but it's still good. I still enjoyed it and thought it worked.
Well, we've seen him a time or two since the 900 issue of Detective. Enough to keep the story in play, but again, it's not like every other issue we read of a Batman title he's there, so yeah.
Enjoyed Daredevil Dark Knights number 7. Kind of. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Okay.
It was for what it is the issue before the finale. And
so you like that it's getting close to ending.
I like that it's getting. There was some good stuff in here. I didn't care for the art. There was some fun adventures that were going on and some fun action stuff. And Matt Murdock, of course, has some, you know, cool dialogue and things, so that it works. But you just got a feeling that it's just kind of set up for what that finale issue is going to be. And I'm looking forward to that.
Misty Knight felt a little out of character.
Yeah, she was kind of
assertive.
Aggressive with Matt Murdock, yeah. And what I'm kind of bummed, I mean, we're going to get Daredevil Dark Knights number 8 and Daredevil 36 about the same time. And then it's almost, we're going to go feast or famine, and we're not going to have any Daredevil for a little while until they relaunch number 1.
How long of gaps are there going to be between the relaunch?
At least 2 months, I think, right?
Wow. I hadn't realized that, because like when they relaunched Hulk last time, there was one title ended, and the next week the new title began. They did the same thing with Secret Avengers. I think.
Well, I thought I heard March, But I might not be right. That might not be right.
No, I think we've still got another issue or two before we get to the end of the current one, and I was expecting the following month.
So there might not be a real downside.
Yeah.
Downsize, yeah.
Okay. I don't think there's going to be much of a gap. I think a month or two between, certainly a month makes sense, as if it's the next issue like it really is. I think only going a week is just kind of crazy. I think going a couple of months is a little dicey. I think getting people out of the habit of buying, you know, be it on pre-order or just in the shop,
mm-hmm.
getting them out of that habit and that pattern is not a good move.
Well, I mean, for the last year and a half or so, we've had two Daredevil titles, basically, each month. We had End of Days before this miniseries,
yeah.
plus the Mark Waid run. So I don't think there was a second. There's going to be a second series, so I know we're at least going to be down to one. And that's a little sad. That's all.
No, I like Daredevil. Understand that.
I did read Amazing Spider-Man 700.1.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious as to what that was going to be about, and just felt like a nice old Spider-Man story that with Peter Parker and just seemed to be getting started, just getting its feet. Under it, so we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Wasn't a lot happening in it, but it was kind of cool.
Do you think they're using these five issues that it lasts for to either test the waters of is it time to bring back Peter Parker, or as a I don't say a stopgap or something, but show him, you know, bring him back for an arc, tell the story with him for an arc. So they can put off bringing him back for that much longer.
Yeah, I wonder if these five issues, and it's Marvel saying, okay, readers, you know, you that ran away from Superior because you wanted Peter Parker, here he is, and you need to come out and buy them. And if it just blows up the chart, which I don't think it's going to, but if it does, then maybe. Marvel says, oh, okay, maybe we need to bring him back a little faster. It's quite possible.
I don't think it's going to light up the charts, and I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little in how they released it. It was something that I'd have to double-check the solicits, but I'm pretty sure was positioned as if it were going to be a weekly series. But, you know, we got the first issue this week, 2 and 3 next week, 4 and 5 the week after that, and... So two of the issues, the even number ones, are never going to have been the most recent issue on the rack ever.
And that makes no sense at all. I mean, obviously you had them done because you're able to release two in a week. So why not, I don't know, backdate a little bit to prior to Thanksgiving, start the weekly run then. You've got that weekly momentum that you can build with it as it – I don't see any advantage to releasing two single issues – the same day. I don't understand it.
I see none, and normally when that's happened in the past, because it has happened a few times, retailers just are not happy. Because if you've got somebody who's buying the books, they're going to buy the books anyways. But if they're just kind of a casual reader and they get it off the rack, it's like, oh, I'll try the latest issue. But, you know, even if two came out in the same week, do they need to get both? You know, it's normally happened in the past, not normally, but in the last few times I saw it, like two issues of Captain America came out, the final issue of one arc by one team, and the first issue of another arc by another team. So it's like, okay, I see how that gets kind of, you know, one backed up and the other's ready to go. I still would have shipped them on different weeks personally. But with something like this, I think either they didn't get all their ducks in a row when they planned it, they didn't realize, you know, the final shipping week of the year, the 25th, wasn't going to be a shipping week to stores, because stores are going to get everything on the 18th to sell for the 25th and just hold it, so they don't have to sweat the is my shipment going to come in over the holidays stuff. I think they either should have, like you said, done it a little earlier to get it out in time before the holidays, or just done it in January.
Yeah, that would have. You know, maybe they're thinking stocking stuffers. Is that possible that they want multiple issues on the stands for when, you know, mom always goes to the comic book store to buy gifts and oh, there's two.
So you think stores are going to be able to explain to the typical mom of a comic reader a point something or other issue.
I am reaching for reasons why this makes any sense at all.
Okay.
I'm trying to defend the marketing department of Marvel.
I don't know that it's the marketing department of Marvel. I think it may have just been editorial snafu or production delay. I don't know. I don't know where the credit lies.
The credit or blame, yes.
I was trying to be cheerful.
Quantum and Woody number 6 was really good. I think this is, I mean, these 6 issues have really all been really good and very funny.
Did you ever read the previous run?
No, I didn't even know about it.
The previous run, everybody, not everybody, a lot of people were just crazy about, loved, and it's like, yeah, I like it, it's good. This one to me is so much better. The issue here with number 6 here, where at times Woody was the smart, sensible one, which was just kind of crazy given how they've set the characters up. And the way things happened, the way the issue ended off, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, and Asmus, his sense of humor is just, it's laugh out loud funny. Always mm-hmm. at least one belly laugh in each issue and chuckles throughout. It's really good stuff. I really, really enjoy this book a lot.
Yeah, I totally recommend it. Again, Valiant's doing a lot of good stuff. This is more their buddy comedy duo action adventure sort of a thing, whereas most of their other books, I don't say are more straight-laced, but are less blatantly comedic. Mm-hmm. But this one's still, if you want it just for, I don't say the serious aspects of it, but you know what I mean. It's having fun with the concept, not making fun of the concept, and I think that's a key difference.
Yeah, it's having fun along the way of telling a good story. That works really well. Elephant Men 52 came out, or number 2, as the graphic kind of shows you that it's just number the second issue of this story arc. Art is still top notch. Glad you introduced me to this book. It's been a lot of fun, and this chapter was really, really cool. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in here, and again, I would recommend anybody that's a fan of, you know, sci-fi or crime, detective type stories, that it's a good blend, and you got to check this book out. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a book that took me too long to get on board with, and I'm waiting for the Hip Flask series to finish up. That's I believe a 5-issue miniseries that's pretty much been released about an issue a year.
Really?
It's in the same universe with the same characters. Has a bit of a time travel aspect, I think, to it. Yeah, because in addition to the Elephant Men series, there's a couple of miniseries and one-shots or whatever. And I don't know why the Hip Flask story has just taken forever and a day to get told.
I do not like the bi-monthly nature of Elephant Men. It is a long time to wait between issues. But the art is very nice. And so I would imagine the artist wants to take his time and get it right.
It's got a rotating art team. They go through a number of different artists between arcs and sometimes within arcs. So I wonder if the delay is – or not the delay, if the time-consuming part is the art or if the schedule is being held up by how fast Richard Starkings is writing.
Oh, that's possible.
Because
– yeah. I just assume – always assume it's the artist.
Well, it makes sense. The art's time-consuming, and certainly with some of these artists on Elephant Men, they're doing some fabulous work. I don't think they should be rushing it. But I would wonder if you had scripts ready sooner or whatever, farmed out to different artists where they have 2 months or whatever they might need or want or can fit into their schedule, whatever, yet could still get this book out on a closer to monthly basis. I think that increased frequency would help the story momentum and would just be a win-win all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's tough to wait that extra month between issues. It really is. That's pretty old.
Yeah, but even so I was able to get back into the story pretty
quickly.
So it wasn't a problem for me, and I read enough stuff that sometimes that is. Let's see, Trinity of Sin, Phantom Stranger, that's getting the Blight stuff going for the Forever Evil. It's got some interesting things going on. So if you're a fan of Swamp Thing, Constantine, Phantom Stranger, the Night Nurse or whatever, and or Pandora or The Question, check out that.
Is it necessary for the Forever Evil story? Does it add anything to that?
Not yet, but it's only like two parts out of 18 or whatever into it. And the basic gist is the Trinity of Sin, specifically Pandora, is kind of what released evil and so forth into the world and opened the doorway essentially for the crime syndicate. And so maybe these guys are going to be part and parcel of solving that problem and, you know, helping Constantine find Justice League Dark and figure out what's going on.
Speaking of Forever Evil, is it delayed? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't they be out by now?
Excellent question. I do not know off the top of my head when the next issue should be released, but I don't recall seeing it on the next shipping week or two.
No, yeah, I didn't see it either. And it's usually the first week of the month. And I just didn't know if it was a scheduled like hiatus or something, or because I've been waiting for that. It's noticeable, the delay now.
Previous issue came out on November 6th.
Right. So it's at least 1 week.
So, yeah.
And it's not coming out on the 18th because we just looked at that. So
it might be coming out on the 25th. Maybe on the 25th. Yeah.
It's at least 6 weeks between issues then. That's unfortunate.
I agree with that. I think, again, it comes down to story momentum. You know, can they keep that going? Can they keep people engaged? And I think having, you know, a noticeable delay or whatever. No, it was supposed to come out on the 25th.
Okay.
I just pulled up the solicit and the expected ship date. So, yeah, it's on time. They just, I guess, are planning a little bit longer between issues.
I guess maybe to get the run of all the Forever Evil tie-ins caught up, maybe? I don't know.
I think it's more a matter of holding a high-profile book for the 25th, because as we talked about, that's going to be a non-shipping week. But it looks like Forever Evil and Justice League will be out that week from DC. So those are kind of their two top books. I wonder if there's a Batman book coming out that week. I'm not seeing one. Yeah, no.
Batman came out yesterday, the 11th.
So yeah, it may just be that they wanted to hold that book in Justice League. So there was some big draws for the stores on Christmas.
Okay, makes sense.
Not that stores are going to be open literally on Christmas Day, but day before, day after, you know what I mean.
Okay.
But that was a good question.
Yeah, that's a long time, and I hope it works out. I hope people remember Forever Evil by the time it comes out.
Yeah, if it seems like forever ago evil, that would be bad.
Exactly.
So I read a couple other things that were interesting. Another issue of Think Tank, still really enjoying that. I'm liking Triple Helix, but I can understand why you didn't stay with it. First issue that Terminator Salvation Final Battle came out. Huh. That was interesting. That was fun. What else did I read? A ton of stuff. And I got another big shipment coming as we record this tomorrow. So I'm glad I'm pretty much caught up. So anything else? Does it pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Justice League 3000 number 1 from DC, Marvel Knights Hulk number 1 from Marvel, and Daymen number 2 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.